Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Former Oregon and Miami Dolphins safety Verone McKinley, the 30s on X at VMcKinley23. And, you know, last time you guys have, you know, been familiar with him, he was doing this. I have to go ahead and play this sound before we bring Verone on.
Out at the bottom, here's Stroud looking for his crossing route. Stroud on the move. Stroud delivers.
Oregon 2021
game,
going to the Shoe, Verone with the game-winning interception off of C.J. Stroud. Verone, what's happening, man?
Man, what's going on, Gabe? I appreciate you having me, man.
Yeah, of course. What do you think of that sound, man, that I had to bring you in? I had to hype you up.
In my opinion, it's legendary. It's really that. It's the best word to say it. It's legendary.
Yeah, that was a hell of a win, man, in 2021. When you guys, obviously, I know the season didn't end quite how you wanted it to, getting to the college football playoff, but that was phenomenal. And now you're in the same damn conference as that team. How about that? At Oregon.
Oh man, that game is. You know that game is going to be electric. I mean, everybody will be tuned in. Everybody will be there. And it'll be cool to see Ohio State in Austin. So it'll be exciting.
Yeah. What do you think about the switches though? Like looking at the Pac-12 and sort of looking at how the Big Ten all sorted itself out. What do you think about all of that?
I mean, you know, personally, I'm always going to be like a Pac-12 fan. I always thought the Pac-12 was an underrated conference. You know, we play late games and we kind of beat up on each other. You know what I mean? Like you play UCLA, SC, Utah in November at Utah. Like you got to go play Oregon State in a rivalry game. Like, you know, I think it's one of those underrated conferences. A lot of pros come out of the conference and, you know,
Yep. Seeing
it now into the Big Ten where there's even more pros and, you know, people say the dynamic of football is different. I just feel like it's another opportunity for Oregon to continue to push themselves as, you know, a big brand in all the sports and just continue to be electric in everything we do. So I think it's great. And, you know, money's always involved in a lot of these things. So
yeah. What about the takeover from Dan Lanning? He's a former linebacker coach here at the University of Memphis. Absolutely love that guy. He's a Kansas City legend. Went to old William Jewell. What do you think about the job he's doing after Mario? And we'll talk about your former coach, Mario Cristobal, in a second.
So it's funny because I went up there for the first game and, you know, I talked to Dan a little bit afterwards and, you know, I've always thought Dan is, you know, the man for the job and he's done a great job, honestly. You know, I think he's changed the culture a little bit and I think, you know, he's changed it to cater to what he's trying to accomplish and he's trying to win national championships and, you know, it's always the goal, but it's always good to see different coaches add their flavor to it. And so I've had conversations with him and just a real down to earth guy, really cares about the players and wants to, you know, put Oregon in that upper echelon with those Georgias and Bamas and get to those big games and win those big games. So I think Dan's doing a great job.
Yeah, and he's got that real, real relationship with Phil Knight. How big is that Nike relationship? How much is he around that program? How much does that Nike contract actually mean? Because we can talk about it all we want, but you had the inside track and saw how it works.
It's huge. Like, Nike, like, you know, people always say, like, it's Nike University, and it really is. Like, you know, you see Uncle Phil at the games. You're going to see Uncle Phil at booster events. Like, he's around, and he's going to talk to the team. He's going to tell us the truth. Like, Uncle Phil wants to win a national championship. It's that simple. Everybody knows that's what he wants. He wants to win a national championship, and he's going to do whatever he can to help us do such. And he's around, so it's super cool. And even, like, you know, the gear, we test out new products before they even come out. I remember last time I was there before the bowl game, the cleats that people were wearing like the following 2 years later,
right,
we were wearing in bowl practice, like testing them out and everything. And so, you know, it's super important and it's super cool, especially, you know, coming from recruits and different guys coming in. It's like you can sell that easily and it's like a real thing. It's not a gimmick.
Yeah, now holler at me about the Pac-12 in general real quick, because we have Memphis potentially getting an invite, potentially going over there. We need to know what it's like, you know, in Pullman this time of year. What's it like in Corvallis this time of year?
Ooh,
that's sort of the idea that we're looking at right now, and it may be a better TV deal for the University of Memphis if they make it over there and sort of do the best of the rest in the Group of Five. Not sure if you've been keeping up with it like we've been keeping up with it, though.
Well, I mean, I've always kept up kind of with, like, Memphis, like the Brady White days. Like,
yeah,
Memphis has always had a good program. So coming up to, you know, like Pullman in, like, October, Pullman is honestly one of the loudest stadiums in the country, and I will, like, stand on that. It is ridiculous. We went up there in 18. We just beat Washington, and it was the craziest, I guess probably top three craziest crowds I've ever seen in my life. So, like, Corvallis, you already know Corvallis. They're going to try to power run. It may get cold. It, like, half of it depends on when you play these people.
Yeah.
Because, like, you play them early, it's like, all right, the weather will be fine. You start getting into November, the weather is cold. It could be rainy. Now people are smash mouth football. It's big. It's crazy. So people don't understand because, you know, it's the West Coast, the Pacific Northwest, but people are diehard fans just like anywhere else.
Yeah, but Pullman, but you really stand on that. Pullman, one of the loudest stadiums you've been in.
Gabe, I would never lie to you. That stadium.
That's wild.
That stadium,
like, people don't think of that, Verone. Like, people don't. People do not even give that a thought. That's not a thought that people put out there in the world.
Go to Pullman as a ranked team with a lot to lose, and they have nothing. Like, it's insane. I remember, like, our bench was close to, like, the fans. Like, they can't touch you, but, like, it's close. So, like, they stand up and start saying crazy stuff. You're like, I can't believe we're doing this right now.
That's crazy to me. But also, it's just crazy to me generally, too, the geographic lines of all these conferences breaking down. Thinking of Memphis and Tulane, potentially, like, South Florida heading to the Pac freaking 12. That just, it's mind-numbing to see how far we've come.
I'm always interested to see, like, it's like everybody keeps changing conferences and TV deals, and part of me feels like eventually it'll just become like two big conferences and everybody's
right.
Going to pick their own schedule basically, and, you know, whoever wins what will get those playoff spots and all that. So
yeah, would that conference interest you, curiously?
Of course.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just a football guy.
Yeah,
man. Good football is everywhere. So really, like, you know, come find out. You see what happens in the Pac-12 goes into the Big Ten, and, you know, playing SEC schools. You see how that's going. So
yeah. Now
Cal goes and beat Auburn.
Yeah, they did. Well, what's his name helped with that? Peyton Thorne, didn't he?
Wow.
nice four picks. He helps with that one. I know Hugh Freeze, he had a chance to get some, like, million-dollar quarterbacks. He may have been regretting that decision at that particular moment. But Cal, also, it sounds like their fan base is making waves on socials. I've been seeing that over the this week. People have finally found the Cal fan base that we didn't know existed the way it did.
You know, they have that section of people. I'm not going to say too much about
right.
that. Like, it's Cal. I mean, it's a good school. Like, I know some of the coaches over there, and, like, they're doing a good job. They've always had a good defense. Like, they've always had a good defense, no matter what. The defense has always been good. So it's good to see them. They're playing well right now.
Now, speaking of playing well, holler at me about your old coach, Mario Cristobal, over at Miami. Has Cam Ward, brought in Damian Martinez. He's doing a hell of a job with NIL funds and using them the right way. But he's finally breaking through this year. And obviously, he broke through a couple of times there at Oregon. But there's always been this, like, sort of conversation around him, like, can he win the big one? Can he get over the top? What do you think about sort of that label being placed on him?
I get it. And, of course, that's my guy. Like,
of course.
Cristobal is like, he's like family to me. But I think that, you know, there's always been something. Like, I've said this to some of my Oregon guys. Like, we had, like, this curse of, like, two games that we probably shouldn't lose. And just, you know, it's just not our day that day. And so I think now that, you know, seeing Cam Ward, because I don't think, like, he hasn't had a quarterback like this since, you know, in a while to play to this dynamic. And kind of, it seems like he has a lot of free will. And Cam Ward, he's like an improviser. Like, he improvises, changes the arm angles, plays with plays with this swagger that is different. And I think Cristobal is leaning into that a little bit more. And I think that's why they're having so much success, because defensively, they looked really good defensively. And even, like, on offense, they still have that run scheme, because Cristobal wants to run the ball 100%. he instilled that in me. Like, you got to run the football to win football games. But allowing Cam Ward to kind of have a control and a sense of let's let Cam be Cam, and we can still incorporate what we want, but allowing him to do what he needs to do as well. And I think that's why they're having a lot of success right now.
Yeah, and then the rest of the ACC is just dog water, quite frankly. Like, outside of Clemson, like, Florida State was they were picked to win the conference. I watched my Memphis Tigers go on the road and handle them physically. It wasn't like a fluky win by any stretch of the imagination. It was a physical beatdown. That defense had 12 tackles for loss, 4 sacks. It feels like he should have the inside track to go win that conference and get into the college football playoff relatively easily.
100%, and I fear I'm going to have to see Oregon versus Miami, and that's when I think that'll be a great matchup. But it's like, oh man, here we go.
Right?
No, he's doing a great job.
Yeah. Now, where are you living at right now? Are you in Texas? Because you were with the Dolphins, and we know that you're looking for a spot to land. Where are you at, personally, right now?
I'm in Arizona. I've still been in Arizona. You know, staying in shape. What's it called? I was with the Cardinals for, you know, this past off season and camp and everything. So we're staying in shape, you know, keeping our options open and everything. So
yeah. So you got any bites here relatively recently?
People always, we get in contact with people, and it's sometimes it's a numbers game, and people get hurt, they need certain spots. So it's always, it's a very big business in the NFL. And, I've become accustomed to understanding that and knowing kind of how the NFL flows, so it's just a matter of, getting the right opportunity at the right time in the right spot.
Yeah, and there's a hell of a lot of injuries to start this year. I'm looking at, like, the 49ers have all of their skill players. What's it, George Kittle, Debo, and Christian McCaffrey all on IR. The Rams are having issues with Puka and Cooper Kupp. You had, Jermaine Johnson for the Jets go down with an Achilles. You had, like, the injuries are nuts. And then also, we'll talk about Tua, your former teammate, and I know that's going to be tough to talk about, but I think that these conversations are very useful to have. But the injuries are crazy in week one and week two, and I think we've seen that the past few years. Like, do you think that is the way we do preseason, lack of full contact practices, less preseason games, do you think that sort of has equaled some of these issues we've seen early in the season?
I always think it's like a mixture, because, I get it. You know, people don't want, like, the starters to get hurt. And, football is just a violent game. So, things are going to happen regardless, no matter what you did in the offseason. Like, sometimes things are just going to happen. Sometimes, people have different training regimens, different diets, and that sometimes plays a part in these injuries as well. And, especially, when it comes to soft tissue, I know there's a big, big concern when it comes to soft tissue injuries. Like, sometimes these things just can't be controlled, but like soft tissue, it comes with hydration and what you're eating. So it's just so many factors. It's hard to speak on it because like different teams do things differently. Like in Miami, we're going, guys are fast. You're in that heat. We're running, but like even in Arizona, we were in the stadium and, out of the heat because it was too hot. Like we're in Arizona. It's 116 degrees outside. You can't practice in that. And so, seeing the injuries, people blame like turf versus grass. Right. So it's a lot. I've still tried to figure it out my own self, from their standpoint of a coach, what is it to keep our guys as healthy as possible? What are the pros? What are the cons? Contact. Cause we don't tackle, in the NFL, you don't really tackle in practice. You can't, guys get hurt, you get rolled up on, whatever it may be. And it's we stay up, but it's you got to get in those games, and when you get in the game, you got to show it then. And so it's it's hard sometimes. So.
Is it always grass over turf to you, by the way? Do you think 32 or 32 teams should probably adopt, getting some nice grass for their field?
I'm not going to lie to you. To me, it doesn't really matter.
Okay.
It my body's never felt different from it. And maybe because I'm young and fresh, but it's I've played on grass, I've played on turf, but let's go play ball.
Yeah. Now, one of those injuries, talking with Verone McKinley III on X at VMcKinley23, and I obviously we no advice given or anything like that because everybody else is doing that, but seeing Tua go down in Thursday Night Football, one of your former teammates, what is that like, man? This is his fourth concussion in 5 years. I know you care for the guy, and you're supporting him in any way, shape, or form at this particular moment, just like the rest of those teammates are in Miami. But how tough is it to watch sort of Tua and the issues he's had with the traumatic brain injuries, with the concussions?
Man, it's tough to see, especially when, you know, I really broke bread with Tua and talked to him, been in that locker room with him, a guy who really cares about his teammates and will put it all on the line. And I was there for all of them except the last one, of course, but I was right there for the ones in 2022, and it's like, wow, this continues to happen. Like, man, what can we do to help prevent that? Whatever it is, you know, you just want to be supportive at that point because, you know, it's deeper than you or football. Like, it's his well-being. And so, you know, Tua loves football. Like, and he loves football. And that's why even the play, like, he, you know, things kind of went a different way during the game. And he's just like, man, I'm trying to help my teammates get a spark, make a play, something. Just trying to get guys, you know, back into it. And it's unfortunate. So, you know, I know he's gonna take the time and get the right people around to, you know, decide how he's going to go about those next steps. But it's always tough to see a friend go down like that, especially when it's happened before. And it was, you know, it was just like, man, not again. So,
yeah. Now,
he'll be all right.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how it works out. And he's going to have 4 weeks here on the IR to deal with, you know, talking with his family and talking with, you know, the people that actually know things as opposed to the people that sit in my seats and just opine about it. When it comes to, like, just – you know, those types of injuries and stepping away from the game, you have the inside track. Like, you feel the type of energy that's given in those situations. I keep saying, and I feel like, you know, this is overwhelmingly the truth, like, as opposed to where we were a decade ago with, like, Andrew Luck getting, you know, killed, castigated by Colts fans and NFL fans around the United States for basically stepping away from the game. You know, you're leaving your teammates high and dry. What are they going to do going forward? The Colts are going to have to rebuild. I remember Calvin Johnson was another example where people in Detroit were going after him. You know, Patrick Willis with the 49ers back in the day, people going after him. I feel like we're finally in a spot where a lot of that shame has been alleviated because we know things. We are hyper aware of what this game can do to us. Do you feel the same way about that?
Partially, I would say that, you know, they've changed some of the rules. Like, you know, there's targeting. I definitely think it's overcalled sometimes, 100% of the DB. It's overcalled.
Sure.
But with the targeting, the hip drop, like, they're trying to prevent these injuries that are causing, you know, like, catastrophic problems. And the good part is that we have more science and knowledge and people around it to where we can understand the effects of maybe later on, whether you need to step away now. Just all of those things definitely play a role in it. And I just think, you know, as long as we continue to learn, just like with anything, I definitely think we can continue to prevent these problems. Even, you know, bringing in the helmets are going to continue to get better. I know you see a lot of the guys wearing the Axiom or whatever, the new Ronell one. And then even, like, you know, some guys are going to start wearing the Guardian cap even more. I know JOK from the Browns, I think, wore it, like, last week. And so it's, you know, there's so many measures that are getting taken to help prevent these things. And These companies who make helmets and shoulder pads and different things are trying to help as well so we can prevent these problems. So I definitely think throughout the course of the years we've progressed, and it's still a work in progress, but I definitely think it's gotten better.
Yeah, me and my producer Connor talk about this all the time, though. When it comes to the Guardian caps, how do you feel about wearing it during a game? I mean, like, is it a style thing? Is it uncomfortable? Because it feels like there's not a lot of players that have gone that direction. We have more than we've had in the past because it's now allowed, but it still feels like guys are straying away from that and not wanting to wear it during games.
Me, personally, I would not wear it.
For what reason, though? That's the real question.
I like, it's just, no, like, it's just one of those things. Like, you know, you've played football for so long. This was the first year I've ever even wore a Guardian cap on my helmet in practice.
Yeah.
Like, I've never had a Guardian cap on. So I was just, you know, like, I'm probably not going to start now. I've been thankful enough to have no injuries, real concussions or anything like that. So I've been good for the most part. So, and that's also part of that goes into, like, how you tackle. Like, of course, helmet to helmet is going to happen. It's inevitable. We play a violent sport. But at the same time, like, you know, they teach us how to gain a roll and the angles you need to take in order to make these tackles in the open field or whatever it may be. So, but I'm not personally putting the Guardian cap on. It's just not. It doesn't look, you know,
it doesn't,
pleasing.
It does not. I can give you that. But if you can save your career by a couple of years by not getting that concussion, it feels like it would mean something.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, you're not wrong. I don't. So it's just like a matter of how you want to go about it. What's your style of play almost? Like, you got to just look at the pros and cons of it.
Yeah. Now, what was it like in Miami? You're a safety. For my listeners that don't know, Verone's a safety. What was it like trying to chase around Tyreek and Jalen out there on the outside, both guys that run 4-2s, 4-3s, whatever the hell it is at this point? Tyreek may be able to break a 4-1 if it really came down to it, but what was it like chasing those guys around in practice?
I think, like, of course, you know, being undrafted, you get to pick where you go. You go to Miami. And I think it made me so much better of a football player, because you're not going to see speed like this anywhere else.
You've never seen it.
You haven't. I played Waddle my sophomore year of high school, so I've known Jalen a long time. Like, I knew him before he had offers. So, like, I knew that, you know, he's special. And so, you know, playing now, you go out there with Tyreek on one side, Waddle on one side, you're like, all right, let's get our depth. Like, you have to, play. You got to play within the game so much in practice, and that's what made it so much. It's like fun, but it was challenging, because they can run all these different routes. They are so fast. They can, and even, you know, being in McDaniel's offense with so much to it, they can get in so many different spots and still find ways to be explosive and get the ball to them. So, like, personally, as a safety, like, it felt so good. Like, I don't even say this much, but, like, when I first started off on the season, you know, I was on practice squad at first, my rookie year, and I'm playing nickel, guarding Tyreek, guarding Waddle. Like, you know, we're playing the Patriots that week. You got to play man. So, yeah. I'm, you know, having to guard these guys, and it just made me so much better of a football player. So, like, it was so much fun, but it was so challenging, and that's what you want in practice. Like, I always, and I'm trying to learn this just throughout my time playing football, you always want practice to be way harder than the game.
Yeah.
Like, practice should always be harder. And, like, I felt practice was as hard as possible. Like,
yeah.
And they practiced, both of those guys practiced full speed. And that's one thing I was, like, they practiced full speed, top notch. Every route is like a game route. And I always appreciated that, because, you know, these are two guys established. They don't have to do that, but they're so dedicated to their craft. When they're out there, they're 100%, they're going, and they're trying to make the next guy better as well. So I think it was a blessing. And I think that, you know, those guys are electric.
Yeah, and that McDaniel system has definitely helped him out. Holler at me about Mike McDaniel, the coach, though, too, because I think he's got this nerdy disposition. Some people can be rubbed the wrong way by it. I certainly am not. I love watching every press conference he has. But how is he behind sort of the curtain, if you will? Is he the same guy that he is right in front of the media?
For sure. And, you know, he wants you to be able to be yourself in that building. And right. He harps on that from the moment I had gotten there. He wants you to be yourself. He wants this to be an environment where you enjoy coming to work. Mm-hmm. Like, you enjoy coming in, and we're going to practice, we're going to meet. Like, you enjoy these different things. And so, you know, he definitely has a different approach to it that, you know, some would say is unorthodox, but he was very passionate about making sure that we're okay ourselves, and we're okay with being ourselves and having a good time, even though we're at work. So I think what you see from the media is what we saw and team meeting. Like, that's Mike, and, you know, he good coach, man.
Yep.
Definitely a good coach and a good guy. So,
yeah. Now, last thing for Verone McKinley III on X at VMcKinley23. Let's talk some real football here, because the first 2 weeks we have a 5-year low of passing touchdowns. I mean, just generally quarterback play has been a little bit down, and there's some reasons for that. Like, if you ask Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, they're saying, you know, the quarterback's not taught how it once was. You know, we don't have guys that live to fight another play. We don't have guys that want to take the checkdowns. But also, there is a different, you know, a style of defense that's being played, and maybe that was spurred by Patrick Mahomes and some of these deep passing types of offenses. But there's been a lot more too high played, a lot more quarters played. You have more of a safety shell over top. You have guys that are just trying to keep it in front. What do you think? Obviously, those things go into it, but what do you think is the main reason that we have seen quarterback play down through the first 2 weeks of the NFL season?
So, okay.
Yeah, let's get into it. Yes, sir.
I don't always think it's quarterback play. Like, I think sometimes people forget, like, there's so much that goes into just a play, a football play, especially an offense, like a passing play. Like, it starts off, boom, got to get a good snap. Cool. We need the O-line to protect. Like, you know, most of the time routes, depending on the down and distance, let's just say routes are going 8 to 10 yards. Like, they have to get to that point. And then especially within offenses nowadays, guys have different not different leverages, but they can have different routes off of based on coverage, based right. on leverages of the defense. So they kind of they're having to think a little bit at receiver as well, because it's like, let's say this corner sits, I'm supposed to keep this vertical. Like, I'm not keep it vertical. And so, yeah. you know, the two high now is starting to attack these different offenses, because two high is allowing for you, like, we're not going to give up explosives. Like, that's the main thing with most defenses now. The emphasis is, let's not give up explosives. Let's make teams work it down the field. And so you have younger quarterbacks now in the NFL, and it's like, you know, things have been wide open to them, or, you know, they want the shot, and it's not a lot of, you know, you get guys like Tom Brady and Peyton that wanted to kind of work the ball down the field. Like, you know, people had tried to say that Tom was like a game manager. And, you know, after my years of watching Tom and made documentaries, interviews, Tom wasn't a game manager. Like, Tom was, right. like, he was just smart. And, like, we yeah. can't always take the
explosive. And game manager doesn't need to have this negative connotation, I don't think.
It doesn't at all. Like, it's just like Tom is a playmaker. Be like, you don't win six Super Bowls and you're not, no. Seven, I'm sorry, it's not six, seven.
Yeah,
but
seven.
Guys, like, I think that's the biggest thing now with the two high. Like, you have to take what the defense gives you sometimes. And it can look boring to the naked eye, but that's just what it is. So then even when an offense does work its way down and they get into the red zone defense has changed, because now defense are going to – think about it. You're going to get a lot of rushing forward. We're dropping everybody else in the coverage. The field's already condensed. So it's like, we're going to take away all these different zones and have – brackets on, you know, Justin Jefferson, like, he's right. not going to get the ball. I hope my corner can win against Jordan Addison or whoever it is.
Yeah.
And Justin Jefferson's not going to get the ball. So at a certain point, it's like, you got to run the ball in.
yeah.
If it's a light box, you already know you played O-line, Gabe. A light box,
sure.
let's check this thing. Let's can this thing and let's run the ball. Let's run
yeah,
the
I mean, you have a lot of defenses like the Bills, for example, play nickel 100% of the time. They're daring you. They're saying, you're going to have to run the ball against us to beat us.
Exactly. And so it's predicated off of that. And even, like, the Bills, like, I know Teron Johnson was hurt last week, but, like, they can play nickel so much because he's, like, he's – especially being in Miami, we played him – I played him, what, four or five times. And, like, the dude is, like, a nickel, but he's, like, a corner, a safety, and a backer all in one. And that's what you can do. When you have a guy like that, you can play nickel to
right.
everything, to 12 personnel. Like, you know, they'll go three backers in if it's, like, a 13 or something. But, like, he has the ability to do that. So – the lack of passing touchdowns now is because I think defenses are getting better from a schematic standpoint, and even just quarterbacks not wanting to, you know, mess up necessarily. So it's like, I'll throw the check down, or,
right.
you know, and even some guys, like we've had this argument before, like Patrick Mahomes really good, probably best quarterback in the league, but sometimes Pat is better playing off script, and that's
yes.
what makes him so dangerous. Because, like, Kelsey, we saw Kelsey, he's running around. Once Patrick scrambles, they have it. They work it in practice. Like, guys have their landmarks of where they need to get to if Patrick's just scrambling. And so that's where more of the explosives come from sometimes from a team like Kansas City, because they're getting things off script compared to they run their regular routes. Oh, we got that covered.
Yeah.
Even if we are in too high, it's covered. Oh, now we got a plaster. They're running around. Uh-oh, here goes Worthy down the file.
right, exactly.
Like, so that's, I think that's why the numbers are down a little bit. And even it just you got to have your pass rush from a defensive standpoint, your pass rush has to work with the coverage. That's always what it's going to be. It's on both sides. The front has to work with the skill player. That's why we all need everybody in football.
Yeah.
If you can't protect your quarterback, receivers aren't going to get the ball.
Yeah.
If you can't rush the passer, DBs are going to have to cover too long, and something's going to come open eventually.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and I want you to speak to this, too, as well, like the differences from college to the pros. And I always try to tell people this, and this is why young quarterbacks struggle at times. Like, they are used to the biggest difference in the defensive backfield from collegiate ball to pro ball is there's just not bus in pro ball. You have very little coverage bus in pro ball. And I feel like a lot of these young quarterbacks are used to, you know, guys running free because guys sort of, some of those DBs forget where they're at or forget their assignment. Is that sort of the biggest difference you saw going from Oregon into the NFL with the Dolphins? Is that no one bus coverages. They just don't. It just feels like that, at least.
I would say, yeah, that's a part of it. And just windows are just smaller. Like,
yeah.
I think even once, they'll say the speed is different. Once you get used to the speed, you're fine. It's just like we have to be tight and covered. And a lot of coaches will preach, like, win your leverage and just stay close to that hip. Because you have to, sometimes they have to make the perfect throw. If they make the perfect throw and perfect catch, kudos, get them down, let's play the next play. Because they get paid, too. But you just have to understand, like, coming to the next level, I think the biggest thing is, like, these, for one, people will scheme you up. They will get certain matchups. They'll have Davante Adams at number two and empty, and they want your backer on him. Like, they set that up. They want the backer on him so he can run an option route. That is the difference, I think, now more in college, I mean, in the NFL than college. They seek matchups more, and then, of course, there's just smaller windows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I hear you. Well, Verone, I appreciate it, man. I'll let you roll. Kept you a little bit too long, but hopefully we can do this again soon, man. For real, this was fun.
No, for sure, man. I appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Well, that is Verone.
All right, brother, man.
Yes, sir. You have a good one.
You too.
Yes, sir. That's Verone McKinley III on X at VMcKinley23, former Oregon safety, also formerly of the Dolphins and the Arizona Cardinals. Well, hopefully we can get him signed here at some point relatively soon. I know that he has the talent to go make that happen. But obviously, we're going to have to find an NFL team that's willing and ready to go make that happen. But appreciate Verone for carving out a little bit of time. Now let's go ahead and grab a break, and when we come back, we'll hop into the Blitz. And one of the big stories I want to talk about in the Blitz is Florida football. We know that they had a board of trustees meeting about Billy Napier and his future there. But there is a bit of a problem when it comes to hiring a new coach. And it's something that not a lot of people are discussing right now, but I want to help us talk through this when we come back from the break right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Now, the biggest stories. Overloading the line. A bull rush of info. It's Gabe's Blitz on the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN, Memphis' sports station.
And the Blitz is, of course, brought to you by Sissy's Log Cabin. Connor, what we got?
Let's have a conversation about Florida football. Billy Napier doesn't have long, we know that. But with the next hire and who is potentially involved, there is a big issue that I know that you want to talk about.
Yes. Now, what I'll say about Billy Napier is they're visiting Mississippi State this weekend. If they lose that game, he's definitely done. If they win it, they're still going to have to think about it. I do get the sense, though, and I don't know if you've seen this, feels like the fan base has a lot more urgency than the powers that be at Florida.
Yeah.
The powers that be at Florida are trying to sit on this and be like, oh, if we can get to the end of the season, that would be ideal. But at the same time, I think they need to open this coaching search relatively soon. And the reason I say that is, let's think about the college football calendar just for a second and the names that are going to be involved in this coaching search. A lot of the names are, you know, programs maybe in the SEC or elsewhere that are potential college football playoff candidates. I've heard Dan Lanning. I've heard Eli Drinkwitz. I've heard Lane Kiffin. Now, if you look at the early signing day, which is when most people, or the early signing period for football, which is when most of the players end up committing and ultimately signing, it is December 4th to December 6th. Let me ask you this, Connor. Do you know when the first round of the college football playoff is?
I'm assuming it's right then.
December 20th and 21st. So yeah. Here's the problem, the biggest problem that Florida's going to run into. If you want a big fish, you're going to have to lure them away from a potential college football playoff appearance. Do you think Lane Kiffin, if you offer him the job and he actually wants to come, do you think he's going to leave to go recruit early when he has the chance to play and make a run in the college football playoff? You know, whatever, 14 days later after the early signing period? No, I don't see that happening. Eli Drinkwitz, same exact way. Dan Lanning, same exact way. So you have these big fish that you want, but the calendar doesn't line up how you need it to line up. So you have to get on this quickly because your signing period and in your signing class.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Could get really, really nasty if you don't have a coach in there to go take advantage of early signing day. And this is going to be something that we watch as the season goes along. Florida might be in a bind here. They might have to find sort of a budget candidate to come in and immediately start recruiting for them because you need to have your recruiting class figured out. You're in the SEC. You're dealing with Georgia. You're dealing with Ole Miss. You're dealing with Tennessee. You're dealing with Alabama. you have no choice but to try to recruit at the highest of levels. And if you're waiting around for a candidate after the early signing period and waiting for the late signing period in February, early February, you're going to be screwed, at least for the next couple of years, because you won't have the requisite talent to go compete in the Southeastern Conference. So that's the issue that I don't think many people are talking about at this current moment. You have the early signing period from December 4th through 6th, and you have the first round of the playoff. Most of the coaches that you want are going to be in the playoff on December 20th and 21st. And they're not going to turn down an opportunity to play in that. They want to make a run, if at all possible. So this is going to be really, really hard on Florida. You either have to entice somebody with a whole bunch of money to leave the school they're at and not play in the college football playoff, or you have to take a budget candidate. Doesn't seem like there's a whole lot in between right now. Urban Meyer has said that the ship has sailed at Florida. That's been one of the conversations. Is Urban Meyer going to come back? It's just all the coaches that they want are going to be coaching for their season, coaching for a national title. And I don't see any of those coaches leaving their current situation to just go recruit at Florida. It wouldn't make a whole bunch of sense.
They should have made the coaching change in the offseason. All of us knew where this was going to go. Every single one of us knew that Billy Napier wasn't the right guy for the job.
Especially with that schedule.
Especially when that schedule dropped, all of us went, whoa, okay, yeah, he's absolutely not making it through the season. So they put themselves in handcuffs. It doesn't make any sense.
I'll give you the best name. This is the best name that they need to reach out to right now to start kicking the tires on to see what's going on. Glenn Schumann, the defensive coordinator at Georgia. You may be able to entice a defensive coordinator not to coach in the college football playoff. You're not going to do it with a sitting head coach. And I know they want the big name, and they want a guy who has experience as a head coach, like the Lane Kiffin, Eli Drinkwitzes, and the Dan Lannings of the world. But you're going to have to look at it in a different direction. I think Glenn Schumann's probably the name you need to reach out to first and foremost to go make this happen. Because being honest, Mizzou, are they going to make the playoff? Very likely. Oregon, are they going to make the playoff? Very freaking likely. Ole Miss, the way they're playing, very freaking likely. So all those coaches that are sitting right there in those positions are not going to just up and leave their school to go recruit for you. So I think you need to look a little bit down the list. I don't know if you can get a sitting head coach. This is part of the reason I have hated the way the calendar sets up and the way we have changed the calendar with early signing day. But at the same time, it is what it is, and you have to deal with it as it comes to you. And Florida is going to have a problem on their hands. There's no doubt about it.
If the schedule wasn't an issue, do you think that Dan Lanning or Lane Kiffin would leave to go to Florida anyway?
That's a different discussion.
Because I don't think they would.
I don't necessarily think so. I think
Drinkwitz would.
I don't think the other two would. I think Oregon's a better job.
I do, too.
I think Ole Miss is a better job right
I do,
now.
Too.
Mizzou is the only one, like you said, with Drinkwitz, that you could make the case, okay, you can be a window program.
I was about to say, is that a window?
Yeah, that's a window program at Mizzou where you build up with the talent that you have. And you take advantage of the windows like they've had the last 2 years under Eli Drinkwitz. Before that, it was not great. I think Florida, you could recruit the requisite talent to be consistent year over year. So Eli Drinkwitz could be the one to leave. But if he has a chance at the college football playoff, why the hell would he leave Mizzou? It's a tough, tough situation for Scott Strickland, the athletic director, and that whole athletic department, because they need to get that program up off the ground. You're losing fan interest. The last thing you want to see is apathy from that fan base, and you have to hire somebody that's going to intrigue them. It can't be another Billy Napier from the Group of Five ranks. It can't be somebody that they don't know the name of right this second. You have to hire an exciting candidate, but those exciting candidates are going to be really hard to bring in at the time you need to bring them in for.
Well, that's why I saw some Tiger fans get a little bit nervous and start saying, well, what about Ryan? I'm like, they can't hire Ryan Silverfield. It's no disrespect to Ryan Silverfield, but they've got to go after a big fish to get that job because they've had a couple misses here in a row, and that fan base is starting to get angry.
Yeah, Ryan would, that's just, to me, I could see him getting another job somewhere. I just don't know if Florida would be in that.
Doesn't seem like the fit.
Well, he knows Florida. He's familiar with Florida. He's from Jacksonville, and he knows the state.
But
at the same time, it just doesn't jive to me. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to bring in a guy who is a first-time head coach who had his issues previously from a Group of Five program, like you just got done with Billy Napier. Going down that same path just seems kind of like a fool's proposition.
So do you think the most realistic option for them right now is Georgia?
Schumann, yeah. DC at Georgia. that Glenn Schumann is who they need to look at because he can recruit. He's young. He's a really good defensive mind. He knows the SEC like the back of his hand. He knows Kirby and Georgia, who is ultimately who you need to get over top to go win that conference. That would be the one that makes the most sense to me.
ESPN NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski hit us with the Woj bomb of all Woj bombs today. He is done at ESPN and has agreed to become the general manager at the men's basketball program at St. Bonaventure, his alma mater.
That's wild.
It's over.
It's wild.
Wow.
I can't believe it. I can't blame him in the slightest. He probably made plenty of money while he was at ESPN for 7 years, and now he can sit on that money. And now he doesn't have to worry about, like, I was listening to Adam Schefter talk about it because he is a really good insider. He's done it for years with the NFL. He doesn't have to sit up at all times of night and wait for phone calls. He doesn't have to be in the shower with his phone in there with him. He doesn't have to, you know, go to the urinal and, do his business in one hand and have the phone in the other hand. Like, that type of stuff, it hurts your family life. It hurts all those things. And I think this is a good move for him. He still gets a fair amount of money. He gets to do it for his alma mater, which he absolutely loves, in St. Bonaventure, and he doesn't have to deal with waking up at 3 a.m. to, you know, post a Isaac Okoro Woj bomb, 3 years, $38 million. You know, he was the last Woj bomb, by the way, Isaac Okoro.
He was the last contract. I think technically G.G. Jackson may have been the last Woj bomb.
Like bomb? Like
the injury.
The injury.
Do we count that as a Woj bomb, though?
I don't know. I think for us it would be more of a bomb than it is in the
it
national
felt like a
scene.
Bomb.
But, you know, I'm happy for the guy because the scoop culture and having to deal with getting those at all times of night, not getting a whole bunch of sleep, having your phone, your storage is probably absolutely drained.
It's probably, your phone gets hot?
Yes.
His is probably just on fire all the time.
Yes. His phone probably is physically heavier from all the texts that he gets. So I'm happy for him. I think this is a cool move for him. And it's really cool for St. Bonaventure because he is plugged in as all get out. And I think he could really help them with whether it's recruiting or NIL resources, maybe fundraising. I think he could do a good job with that.
Yeah. How long do you think he slept? 48 hours after he got done at ESPN? Do you think that's just straight?
But I don't know. I would imagine
his body just collapses.
I'd imagine his body is so used to not sleeping that he probably can't. He's probably one of those guys that goes to sleep at night and can't sleep past 5 a.m. That's my guess about Woj at this particular
moment. In his statement, which was great, he talked about how the time commitment was just not worth it anymore for him. And that it was impacting his family and it was impacting his life. And you know that a job is really stressful when taking a step back is becoming a general manager
for
a college basketball team.
Dealing with NIL. Takes themselves seriously, by the way.
Dealing with NIL money is less stressful than being the NBA insider. And now I will say, being in a world where Shams might be the top dog does feel cold, dark, and a bit scary. And we do need a hero to come
next?
And save us.
Who's next?
I saw
this is the one report I saw, and it was a dark horse. They said it's a dark horse, Jake Fisher.
Dude.
But he's been wrong way too much.
I can't try. Jake, I'm sorry, brother.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Woj was never wrong.
Jake has been the insider
for everybody else, but not the city of Memphis.
I hate to say it for Jake. He's more of an aggregator than a scoop guy.
A little bit. It's going to be,
it's just Shams.
It's probably going to, maybe, I've seen Wendy, maybe. Chris Haynes has been considered.
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
And Chris Haynes just stepped away from TNT, didn't he?
I think so.
So Wendy would make the most sense because he is plugged in and he does work his ass off. He's all over the place. He was in Paris for the Olympics. He always makes the trips overseas when he needs
to. But again, it has to be somebody
that's
willing.
He was there with Victor Wembanyama for his draft party.
It has to be someone that's willing to put in that time. And I will say, that is a huge part of the job, and if Shams is the guy that is willing to do that, then it will probably be him.
Yeah, but then they're going to have to hire somebody, the Stadium or the Athletic. They're going to have to find somebody to replace Shams. Tim McMahon, I think, does an okay job.
Yeah.
Although I didn't really like his article about Ja Morant, the rap music here in Memphis. There's some guys, I think, in-house that they could replace him with. And I think Windhorst and Tim McMahon probably at the top of that list. But we'll see. But I'm happy for Woj.
I'm happy too.
Because
I'm happy too.
There is very few people that understand the ins and outs of that job And, you know, hearing Adam Schefter talk about it this morning and how much goes into it, it really did shed some light on how brutal it can be.
I shed a tear having to turn off his notification today. I did. The Woj era is over. We're going to tell our grandkids about it.
You know what? This is what I'm going to do because I have yet to turn off his notification.
You're going to do it live?
I'm going to have to do it live. Here we go. Let me find it. We all need to shed one tear. I'm turning off the notifications just so you guys see. Right here, Connor. Make sure, confirm for the people out there.
I see it.
It's off. No more Woj bombs will be coming straight to my phone. So.